And good morning, members. Call this meeting of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order for February 25th, 2021. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. And I'll have the legislative assistant take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
Aye, I'm here.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Present.
Representative Bonner?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Elkins?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Cleburne?
Present.
Representative Kosnick?
Present.
Representative Mason?
Present.
Representative New Brindley?
Present.
Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski present.
Representative Quam?
Present.
A quorum is present.
And I'd like the minutes will note that Representative Nash is excused for this meeting. With that, members, Representative Elkins, did you get a chance to read the minutes?
Yes, and I will move their approval.
Representative Elkins moves approval of the minutes from February 23rd, 2021. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Minutes have been approved. Thank you, Representative Elkins. The first member, first item on our agenda for today is the governor's approval of the governor's campaign finance board disclosure members. And I'll start with call on Jeff Sigurdson, the commissioner, and for introductions. Welcome to the committee, and introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chair Nelson. My name is Jeff Sigurdson. I'm the Executive Director with the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. I appreciate the committee taking time this morning to consider the nominations for the membership of the to the Campaign Finance Board that you see before you. I know that the Minnesota House Research provided an excellent document to members about the appointment and confirmation process. I'm only going to highlight a couple of issues. One is that the appointments before you are somewhat unique in that there are only two entities within the state that have to come before both the House and the Senate for confirmation, the board, and I believe MnSure does as well. And so that is somewhat unique. I think it reflects the fact that the board obviously is very involved with elections, which of course is a subject near and dear to all members of the legislature. The you have four nominations in front of you, but actually there are five vacancies on the board. The fifth member, Gary Haugen, who is affiliated with the Republican Party, his term also expired on January 1st of this year, but he continues to serve pending an appointment by the governor's office. He can serve until July 1st, but I point that out because, frankly, I do believe there will be another appointment sometime during this session. All members need to be confirmed by both the House and the Senate within 45 legislative days of their appointment, so there obviously is somewhat of a time frame here that we have to operate within. I think that you're, of course, aware that the board has both an administrative function where the registry for all campaign state-level candidates, political committees and funds, party units that are active in the state. We're also the registry for all lobbyists, and we provide public disclosure for the public officials, so that economic interest statements. The other role is the quasi-judicial role, which is, of course, the board's primary function is to evaluate potential violations of Chapter 10A and those provisions of Chapter 211B, which the board enforces. The way that works, of course, is that the staff does the legwork in terms of taking statements, collecting what evidence is available, and providing drafts to the board to react to. But then it is, in fact, the board's investigation. The board looks at complaints through a prima facie determination, then the board makes a probable cause determination, and only provide an opportunity for all parties who are being investigated to appear before the board on multiple occasions and provide, of course, statements to staff. At that point, then the board goes to findings or a conciliation agreement to resolve the investigation. All of that happens within executive session, and it, of course, explains why that there has to be partisan balance on the board with no more than half the membership representing any political party. You have before you today two members who are former members of the legislature. That is, of course, one of the criteria for board membership is that we always have to have two former members of the legislature representing different parties. That's members Lepic and member Flint. We have to have two members who have not had political activity within 3 years of their appointment. Mr. Rashid is one of those individuals. And then we have two other members who basically have to be from different political parties, but who have less in the way in terms of restrictions. And Member Swanson fills one of those spots. I think that they've all provided, and I've provided to the committee for distribution to members, the information that they provided when they applied for the position. There's a copy of their resume, copy of their appointment statement from the governor, a copy of their economic interest statement, and I'm sure they'll respond to any questions you may have on any of that information. But I did want to have one kind of final comment, when I think trying to explain how important it is for the board to always have an operating board. You know, frankly, without four members, the board cannot operate, frankly. I mean, administratively, yes, we can still take in registrations, send out reports, collect reports, provide information. But in terms of investigations, all of that authority is within the board. The staff only operates at the board's direction and certainly cannot make any conclusions related to investigations without the board. So therefore, it's vital that the board is always in a situation of having enough members confirmed by the House and the Senate so that we can move forward on our investigations, and so that they can provide oversight and direction to staff. I think that the role of the board in many ways is to overcome the worst of my bureaucratic tendencies. They provide sort of a leveling where they provide a perspective of their experience in politics and help staff provide an equitable solution to problems that it encounters while administrating Chapter 10A. So the board has a vital function, and I think that you will find that these are very good nominees, and I'm certainly available for any questions that the nominees are uncomfortable or, you know, simply aren't sure of the answer. I'm available if that is of use to the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sigurdsson. And members, I'd like to get through these by 9:30 so we can move on to the bill we have. But so we're going to start with, I'll move the appointment of Faris Rashid. And Mr. Rashid, you have a short introduction, and introduce yourself and say your name before you speak for the tape, and then we can entertain questions. Mr. Rashid.
Thank you, Chair Nelson, and hello, good morning to the committee. My name is Faris Rashid. I am a partner at the law firm of Green Espel in Minneapolis. I'm a private practitioner with a focus on trade secrets, intellectual property, and technology disputes. As it regards the board, I don't have, as Mr. Sigurdsson mentioned, I don't have any extensive political history. I've never been the chair of or the officer of a campaign or something like that. I was sort of nudged into applying for this position, and in considering the position, thought it made sense, or it appealed to me, because I'm always interested and was looking for an opportunity to serve the government, to be a part of Minnesota's government in a way that did not draw a lot of attention, that I'm not looking for political office. I don't ever intend to seek any kind of higher office. But I like the idea of serving on a committee where just thinking critically, applying some of the skills I have by training, might be of use to the state of Minnesota. And so the campaign finance board appealed to me for that reason. And I approach it much like I do in my daily life as a lawyer. I try my best to read and apply the rules as fairly as possible, to consider both sides, and to reach a fair decision that's based on repeatable principles, organizing principles, fairness, precedent, the message it sends to the state at large, things like that apply equally to everyone that's in front of the board. And I'm happy to entertain questions or say more about myself. I don't want to go on for too long.
That's fine. We'll go to questions. And I understand that, I guess I'm watching two screens. I missed that Representative Claiborne and Representative New Brindley had questions. I would, Representative New Brindley, were your questions for the candidate, or were the questions for Mr. Sigurdsson?
One for each.
Why don't you ask the one for Sigurdsson, Mr. Sigurdsson, and then we'll... And then I'll go to Representative Claiborne. She had a question for Mr. Sigurdsson also.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sigurdsson, thanks so much for that introduction. That was helpful. I'm wondering if you can tell us just quickly the total makeup of the board and what that partisan makeup is right now.
Mr. Sigurdsson.
Chair Nelson, Representative New Brindley. Certainly. Currently, the membership is Gary Haugen, whose term, as I mentioned, expired on January 1st, but he continues to serve. He's a Republican, affiliates of the Republican Party. He fills a position where he simply has to be with a different political party. There's no limitation on his activity within the prior 3 years. Member Swanson affiliates with the DFL party. Again, he's in that position where he has to be representing a different party than Member Haugen, which he does. He affiliates with the DFL, but there's no other limitation on his activity within the prior 3 years. The two members who hold positions who cannot have had prior political activity from the 3 years to their appointment would be Dan Rosen, who affiliates with the Republican Party. His term ends in January 1st of 2022. And then that would also be Mr. Rashid, who will be filling that other position. Again, he's had no political activity within the 3 years prior to his appointment. He affiliates with the DFL. And then Member Lepik was a former Republican legislator, and Member Flynn is a former DFL legislator.
Thank you.
Representative Rue. Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this also is to Mr. Sigurdsson. One, I want to thank you for the great work that you and your team do at the Campaign Finance Board. While we haven't always agreed, I always respect the work that you do. So that's awesome. I would just like to ask you, what is the purpose of the multi-party structure for the Campaign Finance Board? It's not really intended to function as a mini legislature, correct? And then, but to ensure that there's no one party domination, is that correct?
Mr. Sigurdsson.
Chair Nelson, and Member Claiborne. That's correct. I think, frankly, there's another factor that comes into play here too, and that is that legislators or candidates who find themselves with a possible violation of Chapter 10A do in the end find themselves in front of the board to answer questions or address the board and provide their perspective on what happened. In that scenario, you always want to have the ability to see a member of your party on the board. I mean, it would be perhaps, it would lead to more concern if all members were with the same political party. And so I think there was always an understanding here that this isn't a nonpartisan board, it's a bipartisan or tripartisan board where you're going to have the opportunity to know that there are members of your party who are there. I mean, you know, and who share your view of the situation. You don't have to worry about any particular bias in that way.
Mr. Chair, may I have a follow-up?
Yeah, Representative Claiborne, yes, quickly. Okay.
Well, we have multiple major parties now, not just Democrat and Republicans, but has there ever been a governor who has appointed more of one party than the other and have an imbalance on the board?
Mr.
Sigurdsson. Chair Nelson, Representative Claiborne. No, there is not. Again, you can have no more than half the membership with one political party. We have had, when Governor Ventura was making appointments, he appointed members both from the Independence Party of Minnesota and members who were independent with no political party affiliation. Also, Governor Pawlenty appointed two individuals with no political party affiliation. So we have had that, but we've never had more than three members from any political party.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick, is your question for Mr. Sigurdsson, or is it for the candidate?
It's for Mr. Rashid.
Okay, I'll go. Representative New, you had a question for the candidate, for Mr. Rashid?
Correct.
Go ahead, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rashid, thanks so much for being here and for applying for the position. My question is, you mentioned that you were sort of nudged into applying, and I'm wondering who nudged you?
Mr. Rashid.
A long time ago, I practiced law with Carl Procaccini, who's counsel to the governor. And I told Carl we were here that I was interested in basically, I don't mean this as a slight to the Campaign Finance Board, but I was interested in boring government work, that I wanted to serve on a committee that was within the the machinery of government where I could just do some work, spend some time, and never, you know, reach any kind of public profile. And years later, Carl kept that in mind and suggested I apply for a board. He didn't say this board. He told me to look at this list of boards that's available online. And it was through that kind of searching that I landed here.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No.
Representative Kosnick.
Well, interestingly, Representative Brindley had asked my question, so it was answered sufficiently. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Any other questions of Mr. Rashid? If not, I'll renew my motion that I'll renew my motion to appoint Faris A. Rashid to the Minnesota Campaign Finance Board. And we'll have to take a voice or have to take a roll call on this. So, Ms. Spreck, if you want to take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Pass.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
Pass.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Quam?
Pass.
Representative Kosnick?
Pass again.
Representative New Brindley?
Pass.
Representative Quam?
Pass.
With a vote of 8 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, I think Draskowski was left out.
You did, Mr. Draskowski.
My apologies, Representative Draskowski.
Draskowski votes aye.
All right, with a vote of 9 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Rashid. And
thank you.
The next person I'll move the appointment of Stephen Swanson to the Campaign Finance Board. And Mr. Swanson, if you want to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your introducing yourself to us.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Swanson. I've been on the Campaign Finance Board since July of 2017. There was a brief interlude last summer when the board was not fully composed for about a month. My background is I'm a retired Hennepin County District Court judge, and I've had lengthy experience as an administrative law judge with the Office of Administrative Hearings. I've also been fortunate to have extensive experience working with United States Department of Justice and USAID projects in foreign countries. My interest in serving on the board came after my stint as a contract administrative law judge came to an end. I frankly was looking for some way to continue in public service, and an opportunity came up to apply for the board, so I applied. I find the experience very rewarding, and I'm very interested in using my skills developed as a judge in working through the difficult judicial functions of the board. But I also very much enjoy working with our excellent staff, providing support to them, because frankly, they do the work of this board and they work very hard. And their work involves assisting people who are regulated by the board to comply. And I very much admire that. That to me is the best form of public service. So I'm happy to be on the board. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I respectfully request your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Members, do we have any questions for Mr. Swanson? Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Swanson, for being here and for serving on the board. My question would be, part of what the board does is advocate and take positions on legislative issues that they would like to advocate for. Are there any legislative issues that you think that the board should be pursuing?
Mr. Swanson. Mr. Swanson, you're muted.
I apologize, Mr. Chair and Representative New Brindley. Yes. Each biennium, the board puts together through public debate in public meetings a legislative agenda. And it does that because the board is in a unique position to understand problems that are being faced by the board and the staff, and frankly, by the public officials and others regulated by the board, problems with the legislation that currently exists. So we do have a full legislative agenda this session, which Mr. Sigurdsson has provided, and we'll be happy to talk to any member about. But frankly, as a board, we're in the best position to identify problems with the legislation and to make recommendations and educate the members on solutions. We have a set of technical amendments, which I think are non-controversial. We have a proposed revision to the lobbyist disclosure requirements, which we've been working with through the Lobbyist Association, and have made quite a bit of progress, I think, in coming up with a bill that the regulated industry can accept as well. And we have a couple of distinct policy proposals. One to include spouse assets as part of the economic interest statement disclosure, and the other to add a functional equivalent to the magic words in terms of political advocacy. Those are all proposals that the board has vetted through work with the staff and hearing from interested parties in the community. So I would recommend that the legislature take a look at those during this biennium. I understand it's kind of late in the first session, but there may be a possibility to do some of that in the first session and look at the, what I would say is the more policy-oriented ones in the short session. Thank you.
New Brindley, Representative New Brindley, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Swanson. I appreciate that. That was thorough. You mentioned the magic words and test and express advocacy. And I'm wondering if there are specifically, if there are any organizations specifically that you think should be disclosing and are not.
Mr. Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative, no. I don't have any knowledge of any specific organizations that should be disclosing that aren't.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Swanson, or I don't know if I should call you Mr. or Judge, or, but what I would like to know, can you talk about the similarities and differences between your, between this particular role that you're for the board appointment and your role as a judge? I'm just thinking about the different contexts of those positions. And then also, could you just speak a little bit about what skills you have and how those values may translate into the work that you would do on the campaign finance board?
Mr. Swanson, Judge Swanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Cleveland. The similarities are that I bring to the task of analyzing fact patterns after investigations, reading depositions, doing the work that a trial court judge would ordinarily do in understanding the factual basis that either supports or does not support the allegation contained in the complaint. The big dissimilarity is that this is a board, it's not a single judicial officer making a decision. So as an administrative law judge, I would make recommendations to the government agencies following contested case hearings, but it would be my recommendation. Here we have a collegial group, and that makes for a much more, I think, vibrant discussion than just a single judge hearing a trial or reading a fact pattern and making a decision. So the similarities are there in terms of the skills I've developed, but the collegiality is a different role. I've never been on the Court of Appeals, for example. So typically it's up for some work on the court in Bosnia where you worked with panels. I didn't have a lot of experience working collegially. Thank you.
Follow up, Representative Claiborne?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Okay, with that member, I'll renew my motion of the appointment of Stephen, of the recommendation to that Stephen Swanson be confirmed to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. Ms. Spreck, can you take the roll?
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Claiborne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Pass.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
Pass.
Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Representative Quam? Representative Kosnick?
Pass.
Representative New Brindley?
Pass.
Representative Quam? There's a vote of 9 ayes and 0 nays. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Ms. Spreck. So the recommendation has been confirmed. Move that forward. The next person on it is Ms. Carol Flynn. If you want to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your introduction to us. You're muted.
I'm working on it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm one of the retiree appointees representing the Senate from many years ago. Some of my background is 15 years I worked at the University of Minnesota and then became an AFSCME public employee staff person for a time and was elected in a special election to the Senate in 1990. I served there for several years in some leadership roles, ended up chairing the Transportation Committee and working on the light rail. That has been identified as my major accomplishment while I was there. And retired in 2000, moved downtown with my husband and live here for the last 20 years. I was initially appointed to this board by Governor Dayton and subsequently reappointed by Governor Walz. In serving with four lawyers, I view my role on the board as sort of the practical person, along with Peggy, recognizing that as elected officials, you have a slightly different view. I rely on the lawyers to deal with the details, and I look more at the bigger picture.
Well, thank you. And questions? I see Representative Bonner has her hand up.
Thank you, Ms. Flynn.
It's an honor to have you here today. I had just really a couple quick questions for you. You mentioned sort of that role of sort of being the voice of reason on the board. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the process that you use for reaching consensus on the board between folks of different political parties and kind of how that has played out over time.
Well, it's
Ms. Flynn.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Yeah.
Representative Bonner, one of the interesting things was that initially one of the members of the board and I were pretty far apart and on some important issues. We just had a different view of the world. And that member ended up, this was pre-COVID, and he gave me rides back home after the meetings. And pretty soon we became friends, and we realized we weren't that far apart, and we found a number of areas where we could agree. And of course, most of our votes on the board are unanimous. There aren't that many split votes, as it turns out. But I guess what I'm leading up to is one of the things that happened over time is that the House and the Senate and the two parties tended not to meet with one another as in recreational settings anymore. And I think you've lost some contact with one another as a function of those divisions. And of course, the COVID has interfered with that interaction as well. But I would encourage it that there are opportunities for agreement when you get to talk one-on-one with your colleagues.
Follow up, Representative Bonner.
Thank you. It's encouraging to hear that there's good civil discourse happening. I know you also, I believe, were a former legislator. And I'm wondering if you could speak just briefly to how that sort of prepared you for the board and how that helps you in your decision making.
Ms. Flynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Bonner. I actually served on the Ethics Committee and the Elections Committees when I was in the Senate, and it was some of the initial ethical requirements that evolved into this current legislation. Senator Marty and I served on the same committee along with Senator Johnson back then, and I believe we were the first to start requiring that lobbyists couldn't provide extra benefits or whatever, or you couldn't have more than a $5 cup of coffee or something along those lines. And so that, I think, was direct preparation for serving on the board.
Representative New Brindley, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, former Representative Flynn. Certainly, we appreciate your service. My question is, as a former DFL, senator, not representative, as a former DFL senator, what has your continued involvement been in DFL politics, even, you know, whether it's caucuses or even just voting in the new presidential primary this year? What has been your continued involvement?
Ms. Flynn.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Brindley, I did vote in the presidential primary. I have not been actively involved in, well, first of all, I don't door knock anymore and do any of those kinds of activities. Pretty much slowed down after age 70, I think.
Ms. Flynn, my former senator claims to be in a 12-step program for recovering politicians, but yeah. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No one can blame you for not door knocking anymore. Thank you.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just a little bit, I have memories of Steve and Mo, you know, Spigum and him. They got together and would speak around, and that camaraderie is missed. I was wondering, with your functionality of explaining to a judge and lawyers legislative intent and the restriction of actually following what the legislature intended and wanted, as opposed to making things from whole cloth, is there any of that component in the discussions?
Ms. Flynn.
Well, I'm not sure I understood your question, but what the legislative intent was from, you know, almost 25 years ago, so I suspect it's been modified over time. The intent was just in not have money influence any legislative decision, and I think that's been true and probably was true even before the law was passed, but it's certainly true now.
Representative Quam, follow-up.
Thank you for the feedback.
And members, I remember my first term, the whole, it was the coffee cups that were given to us by one lobbying group, I believe it was the credit unions, that had our pictures on them. And we had to give them back because even though they determined the cost of the coffee cup was less than $5, by putting our picture on them, it made them worth more than $15. And so we either had to pay for them or give them back. And I think most members gave them back. But that's 20 years ago. But anyway, members, if no further questions, I'll renew my motion that the appointment of Carol Flynn to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board be recommended to be confirmed. Ms. Spreck, if you take the roll.
Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Representative Cleborn.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
Pass.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative New Brindley.
Pass.
Representative Pulowski.
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Quam. Representative Kosnick. Representative New Brindley. Representative Quam. With a vote of 9 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Ms. Flynn, and the recommendation is going to be forward on. The next person we have is Margaret, or I think everyone calls her Peggy Lepic. I'll move the appointment of the recommendation of the appointment of Peggy Lepic to the Campaign Finance Board. Ms. Lepic, you introduce yourself and we'll proceed to questions. You're muted. There we go.
Yeah, I was having difficulty with my mouse. Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Peggy Lepic. My official name is Margaret. And I have served on the Campaign Finance Board now for 5 years. As you can see from my resume, I've been a very active volunteer for many years. It's been a great way for me to meet people, to make friends and give back to my community. And my volunteer days are also what eventually led me to run for the legislature in 1990. Shortly after I retired from the House in January of 2003, Governor Pawlenty appointed me to the Metropolitan Council, where I served for 8 years, the last three as vice chair. Since leaving the Met Council, I've remained interested in public affairs, although I haven't been particularly active in the political arena. I'd like to continue my service on the Campaign Finance Board because I really believe strongly in the importance of the work that it does. The agency's charge to oversee and publish information about money raised and spent to influence state elections is vital to the integrity of our elections and to the public trust in the decisions that are made in state government. I have a few thoughts on the board itself that I'd like to share with you. Because the board is a quasi-judicial agency, most important is the absolute necessity when dealing with individual cases of fairness and consistency, regardless of one's political affiliation. I also like that the board has representation by people who have run for state office and know what it is like to be directly affected by the campaign finance laws, which can be complicated, as I'm sure all of you know. The board expects a great deal from both candidates and their treasurers, who are nearly always volunteers. And so it has a responsibility to provide them with good training and readily available help. Much of this work is done by an excellent staff, and people tell us that overall they do a very good job. It has been a great privilege to serve on the board. I hope that I have made a positive contribution and have lived up to my own expectations of bringing a nonpartisan and open-minded approach to each case that comes before the board. And I would be honored to continue. Thank you. I look forward to your questions.
Questions from Ms. Leckert. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Lepik, former representative. I will, in the spirit of fairness, also ask you the same question that I asked former Senator Flynn. We know that being in the legislature is an interesting experience, to say the least. And I know you spoke a great deal about that ability to maintain bipartisanship and to rule with integrity as you make decisions for the board. And I wonder if you could briefly tell us a little bit about your experience as a legislator and how you feel that has really helped prepare you for your work on the board.
Ms. Lepik.
Thank you for the question, Ms. Bonner. I think what it taught me was the value of sitting down and discussing an issue with someone who doesn't agree with you or who has a different perspective on it. And I know I did that quite a bit when I was in the League of Women Voters, and it carried over into the legislature, where in a very public setting, it really showed its value. And actually, the discussions that I had in my office with one or two legislators at a time who came at an issue that I was concerned about were very helpful, because sometimes something they said would really ring a bell with me, or something I hadn't heard of before or given that much credence to, and I began to understand it a little better. And I think the result of that was that from both sides, we came towards legislation that was better. And I really value that. I think, with the board now, we are such a small board that we can't discuss issues very much except one-on-one outside of the board meetings itself. We can do it, but actually I think the best discussions come forward right there in the board meetings, where people can express their feelings about certain issues that come up.
Follow-up, Representative Bonner.
No, that is a wonderful answer. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Lepik, again, for your service as well as a former representative. I would ask the same question as well. You sort of proactively mentioned that you have not been very politically involved, but what
what have you done? What has that involvement been? You know, have you been involved in caucuses at all? Did you vote in the presidential primary this year for the first time? What has been that continued involvement?
Primarily, it has been caucus attendance, not every time, but occasionally. And that's about it. I vote. I have never missed a vote. You know, in terms of going out and knocking on doors, things like that, no.
Just a follow-up, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Lepik.
The next person I have is Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome, Ms. Lepik. I've known Representative Lepik for probably 20 years now.
30.
probably at least. But, you know, like me, she's served on the Met Council as well. She served on the Met Council during the Pawlenty administration. And I've always known her to be, you know, the kind of Republican who can reach out across the aisle and work with members of the other party. And I think she's the, you know, ideal candidate for a position like this. But with her experience, deep experience in different forms of levels of government, and her even-handed and comparatively nonpartisan demeanor, I think she's perfect for this position.
I didn't hear a question there. He must have met you in kindergarten, Representative. What, Ms. Lepik?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Elkins. That was a softball.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative New Brindley, again, kind of asked the questions or the thoughts that I was inquiring about. I guess I would just make a comment of the two past legislators. Just kind of noticing, and if you indulge my comments, that their demeanor and just the wisdom of approach to bipartisanship is something that's I think would be well served if we had a little more of in our current legislature. So I appreciate them serving, and I do not have another question.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I too know Representative Lepik way back from League of Women Voters. And maybe she would like to make a comment on that, because I think League of Women Voters was an incredible institution to provide background for people going into public service. And it's unfortunate now that our culture makes it so difficult for people to participate in the League to the extent that they used to.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Lepik.
Well, what can I say? The League has been very deep in my bones for a long time. The only time since 1972 that I have not been a member was when I lived in Canada. And when we moved back to Minnesota, the League was the first organization I joined, because I knew that I could find out about local issues, learn about the state, because I'd never lived in Minnesota before, make friends, work on issues that were important, that had value. And as I said, it was largely actually through the League of Women Voters that I wound up running for the legislature. Not entirely, but definitely it had an impact. And it is, in terms of an organization that looks at many sides of an issue before coming to a decision, that is very important.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lepik. And my mother was in the League of Women Voters also. My brother and I used to tease her, though, and call them the voter ladies. Representative Greenman.
Somebody who has been through this process, can you hear me?
You're very faint. It sounds okay. Like you're in a tunnel.
Let me find some headphones, and I guess I will turn it over to New Brindley. If you can't hear me, I'm going to have to.
I can hear you better now if you just lean into the microphone.
Okay. It's great technology. So I'll just lean in. As somebody who has been through this process, And actually, I was in front of this committee, of the Elections Committee, when Representative Sanders, I believe, Tim Sanders, was the chair. I just really appreciate and want to appreciate it. I got the chance to serve with Senator Flynn and Representative Lepik, and also with Member Rosen, who I think is still on the board. I just wanted to both lift up what folks are saying, which is, and Rashid, we haven't got a, Mr. Rashid, we haven't got a chance to meet, but the boring but really important work of looking at the stuff that comes before us, working with staff, and how most of those conversations on the board were that, and how much I learned from the other folks. And so just really appreciate you coming up and serving. It is a really important and I think often unsung position, like many of our boards. And so I guess what I would ask Representative Lepik is, as you think about your service on the board and your relationship with the other members, what makes you want to keep serving? Like, what is the, because it is, you know, it's a labor of love. We don't pay you, don't do any of that. What do you think brings in that service?
Ms. Lepik.
Well, as I said in my comments, I really believe in the mission of the board. And I really enjoy listening to the back and forth, particularly among the lawyers, because I'm not one. I am awed by the depth of their research and knowledge. But I hope that what I bring is a knowledge of what the impact of those rules and statutes regarding campaign finance is on people who run for office. If you have to fill out those multiple reports, if the treasurer has to fill out all those multiple reports, that is a huge commitment of time. And I think that it what Representative Senator Flynn and I bring is a hands-on experience with some of that. Even though my experience ended in 2003, still, you know what it was like, and it is far more complicated now than it was then. So I have a lot of empathy with the people who are trying to do the right thing and sometimes mess up.
Thank you. Representative Drazkowski. And then I'll have let Representative Brindley finish up. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was, and thank you, Ms. Lepik, Representative Lepik, for your service and Zoom. Okay, here we go. I got a little better picture now. Thank you for your service. And I know I have been to some campaign finance board meetings, and I too find myself watching the ping pong match back and forth of ideas and thoughts and analysis. And I think the board has, the ones I've been to has done a good job of that. However, my question or comment to you stems back to the discussion earlier where members were fawning as you were over the League of Women Voters. And as you probably know, Secretary Simon came before the legislature last April asking for almost unlimited, powers to change the election rules around COVID. And the legislature largely did not give him that authority. And a month later in May, the League of Women Voters versus Simon was the lawsuit that they brought to create all kinds of new access in court. The court stamped their approval on this consent decree that removed then the requirement that witness signatures be placed on absentee ballots. And I think you probably understand the give and take. Democrats largely want people to have unrestricted access to elections, and Republicans largely want more integrity. And so integrity was lost there during that election, and increased access was gained. So I was just curious whether you knew that happened and that the League of Women Voters had stepped out and to many of us no longer is a nonpartisan organization.
Ms. Lepic, I don't know if that's within the jurisdiction of the Campaign Finance Board or not.
Well, I will give a very brief response. I was aware that the League was a party to the lawsuit, I believe, or whatever. Don't know exactly how it goes. I did not, some of these decisions are made at the state level, actions at the state level. They start basically with a premise. And then if a premise is approved, the state feels free to act upon it. As a member of the League of Women Voters, I have generally been in favor of all the of their advocacy positions. I don't agree with everything they do, but I also feel some sympathy with trying to open up the system and make it as accessible as possible while still, how can I put this, having some real ability to make sure that a vote is valid. I guess that's the best way to put it. And I don't think I better go further than that because it hasn't been before the board as far. Well, no, I don't think it's come before the board.
Representative Skowski, follow up or?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Lepic.
And our last questioner is Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually, interestingly, my question actually was about the League of Women Voters, but it's a little bit different. You know, I've sat on the Elections Committee now for a couple of cycles, and the League does come before the committee and advocate specifically on campaign finance board issues. And so my question is, with that advocacy, do you ever feel conflicted with your position on the board and what we're hearing in that advocacy from the League of Women Voters?
Ms. Lepic, Representative Lepic.
I would not feel conflicted unless there was something that came before the campaign finance board itself and I had to weigh into it. What the League of Women Voters is advocating at the state level, if I'm not involved, I separate that.
Follow up, Representative Brindley, or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, thank you.
And I see Representative Greenman quickly. I want to get vote on this before 9:30 and get the next bill started. Representative Greenman quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to take exception to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yell into my computer. I just wanted to briefly take exception to what Representative Jaskowski said. In addition to not thinking it's appropriate to bring that issue up in front of the campaign finance board, which didn't hear the issue. I also take exception to the fact that the DFL and frankly, all of our representatives in the legislature aren't working both for integrity and to ensure that every eligible voter can vote. So I would just like to leave it there.
With that, members, I will renew my motion to confirm the appointment of former Representative Margaret Lepic to the Campaign Finance and the Closure Board. And to confirm that, Ms. Breck, take the roll, please.
Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Representative Cleborne.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
Pass.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative New Brindley.
Pass.
Representative Pulaski.
Pulaski, aye.
Representative Quam.
Pass.
Representative Kosnick. Representative New Brindley. Representative Quam. Vote of 9 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails.
Thank you, and you're on your way. And members, with that, thank you, Mr. Sigurdsson, for bringing them forward, and I look forward to the last one sometime later this session. And with that, members, I will move, and Representative Freiberg is here. Yes, I see him there. I just want to make sure. I'll move House File 70 be re-referred to the Committee on Committee on Climate and Energy Finance and Policy. Can't even talk today. There's a fiscal note for this. It should be in your materials. And I see there's also an amendment. And Representative Freiberg, you want to explain your amendment? I'll move the A7 amendment.
Sure.
A4 amendment.
It would put it in the shape I'd like. It incorporates some feedback from stakeholders, including Xcel Energy. It kind of aligns some of the definitions with terms in existing statutes creates sort of a preference for projects that are within Xcel's service area. And I understand House Research has recommended a technical amendment. They wanted the word projects on line 2.4 changed to the word programs.
Mr. Gehring, can you explain that for us?
I beg your pardon?
Mr. Gehring, can you explain what that technical amendment does? And I think it's just a minor change.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that reference on line 2.4 of the amendment just appears to be a typo and should refer to a review of energy conservation programs available from utilities rather than projects. So it's just cleaning up a typo.
So members, I'll move that we do that technical amendment changing on line 2.4 of the amendment. It's the amendment or the bill?
It's to the amendment.
Yeah, the 2.4 of the amendment, changing that, the word projects to programs. Members, all in favor of that technical amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment's in the way you want it. And then all members, do you need to explain it anymore, Representative Freiberg, the amendment?
I think I explained it as much as I need to, but I'm happy to answer questions if members have any.
Members, any questions on the amendment? If not, I'll renew my motion that that the A4 amendment be passed. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The A4 amendment's on. Representative Freiberg, explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 70 would establish a revolving loan fund for building improvements that would reduce energy and water consumption in state-owned buildings. These are improvements that save money but are often overlooked because of limited operating funds. All cabinet-level agencies would be eligible for the loans. The bill sets out an application process, requires agencies to repay the loan, and repurposes the currently empty property loan fund. That's just a short summary of the bill, but with me to testify is Marcus Grubbs from the Office of Enterprise Sustainability at the Department of Administration, who can provide a little more detail about some of the department's energy conservation efforts.
Mr. Grubbs, if you want to identify yourself for the record and please proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Chair Nelson and Representative. My name is Marcus Grubbs, and I work in the Department of Administration, Office of Enterprise Sustainability, and I believe my colleague Julie is pulling up a slide deck for me now. We just wanted to go over a little bit about the function of our office to provide some context and where we're at as a state in terms of own buildings and meeting some goals that we have, and talk about the purpose of the revolving loan fund. So the Office of Enterprise Sustainability was created back in 2017 with Executive Order 17-12 and renewed under Governor Walz in 19-27. It directs state agencies to conserve energy and water and reduce waste, ultimately to avoid costs, operating costs. And the order establishes a sustainability steering team and chaired by Lieutenant Governor and with membership from 8 commissioners. And it also directs state agencies to engage with our office and participate in the sustainability efforts of the state. We as an office are geared at tracking and reporting and providing updates on the progress towards our sustainability goals outlined in that executive order. And we provide technical assistance to agencies and help share best practices. And so those goals identified in that executive order are shown on the screen here, and I read them for you. But the important ones to think about today are the energy goal, which is reducing energy consumption 30% per square foot by 2027, reducing water consumption by 15%, and reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 30% by 2025, which lines up with the Next Gen Energy Act. And these are ambitious in some ways, and some of them are something we have much more experience with than others, and particularly energy conservation. And so we have a long history of understanding the best practices and are able to move these things forward with the right tools. So all of this data then flows into our reporting around these goals and is available to you and the public and everyone else at sustainability.mn.gov. So we track metrics around all of those goal areas, and you can learn a lot more by going to the website, but we prominently post an estimated avoided costs due to the conservation measures that have been implemented to date, and also a reduction in CO2 emissions. We track 17,000 vehicles and pieces of equipment, some 3,000 buildings, and are pretty proud that this is a unique tool that most states, or actually no other state, has to communicate with our citizens. And so the first goal that I want to talk about is energy, and reducing energy by 30% by 2027. We are 35% progress towards goal, which means about a 16% reduction in energy consumption per square foot. And you can see how that's changed over time from our baseline year. 2018 and 19 notably are a little bit higher because of more severe winter weather and also warmer summer weather. So we need substantial investment to continue moving the agencies towards this goal line. And I think that's what we're going to talk about with the revolving loan fund today. In the area of water, we are about 24% progress towards goal. It's of course, we've made a steady improvement over time, and that is due to efficiency work done by the Military Affairs, the Natural Resources, and improvements at Met Council's wastewater treatment plants, by and large. In a lot of cases, there's synergy between energy and water at the what's called the energy and water nexus, especially when we're using heated water, or if we have to pump water. We can get a sort of a double savings for our bigger bang for our buck if we can work on projects like that. There's also additional opportunities to just reduce water use in terms of landscape irrigation. So in the area of greenhouse gas emissions, we are 61% progress towards goal. And that means about an 18% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions overall. And our baseline here is 2005 to line up with the Next Gen Energy Act. And you'll see that we've been pretty steady, 17, 18, and 19. And again, our emissions went up a bit in 18 and 19 because of that more severe winter weather and hotter summers. But overall, a couple things are driving this, and that's reduced from that baseline period of 2005, reduced emissions from the electricity sector. We know our electricity has gotten a lot cleaner. There's also been a significant effort of consolidation of state offices dating back from 2005 to now, and improved energy efficiency in the buildings we lease and operate ourselves. So looking forward, agencies are making energy efficiency and conservation improvements to existing buildings. And we're building more energy efficient buildings under the SB 2030 program. which now requires buildings be built to 80% more efficient than the average building in 2003. We're also incorporating more on-site renewables where it makes sense, and again, making purchase of renewables where it makes sense. And then further, to go beyond thinking about this, further stretches of GHG emissions will require fuel switching, for example, from heating with natural gas to heating with electricity. The revolving loan fund is crucially important to agencies reducing energy use and water use and avoiding operating costs. And that's because when agency budgets are tight, they typically choose fulfilling their mission over energy and water conservation improvements. And I don't think I can fault them for that, but we need to be able to provide an additional tool to help agencies in achieve those energy efficiency improvements. And the revolving loan fund is a tool that is a common tool used for energy efficiency and water conservation. And in fact, it's something that 31 other states have similar efforts. And of course, we have local examples at the City of St. Paul and the St. Paul Port Authority. So all cabinet level agencies will be eligible to apply for funds, and requests will be reviewed by the Office of Enterprise Sustainability and recommended for approval to the Commissioners of Administration, Management, and Budget and Commerce. Loan recipient agencies will enter into an interagency loan agreement with admin and OES, and the agencies will be responsible for contracting to complete the projects and repay the loan from the project savings in a maximum of 7 years, a 7 year period. The bill outlines that the loan applications would include the needed information to determine the efficacy of the project, and some of those things are listed here. And here's a picture of someone doing what's called a retro commissioning study, looking at a building, optimizing its operations. And that's something that is an example of a project we would be able to typically fund in that 7 year payback.
How much more of this longer system?
One more slide.
Okay.
One more slide. Possible energy and water investments include updates to lighting, heating, cooling, heat pumps, water fixtures, irrigation, and retro commissioning. When agencies realize avoided costs, they would repay the fund to be loaned out to other agencies. The next slide just shows some examples of how fast some of the money can turn around. These are lighting projects that were recently completed on the Capitol complex, so really short payback for lighting replacement. And with that, I'll just say that there's opportunities for avoiding energy costs across the state at a lot of facilities, if not all of our facilities. So thank you, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
You want to hang around, and the next person on the testifier is Jamie Fritzky?
Fritzky, very close.
I missed the K when I first said it. Proceed with your, identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Chair Nelson, Representative Freiberg, and members of the committee. I'm Jamie Fritzky, Policy Manager for the Center for Energy and Environment, more commonly known as CEE, providing brief testimony in support of House File 70. CEE is a nonprofit based in the Twin Cities with over 40 years of energy efficiency experience in research and development, education, program development, implementation, and policy. We greatly appreciate seeing legislation that would establish a revolving energy efficiency loan for state buildings. Energy efficiency and energy conservation is the most cost-effective energy resource we have and should be actively implemented to reduce building operation costs and increase space usability. Establishing a revolving loan for state buildings will provide resources to continually implement and invest in cost-saving efficiency that otherwise might be delayed or not take place. These energy efficiency improvements reduce building operating costs and in turn reduce costs to taxpayers. I'd like to thank the author for the amendment to conform definitions to existing 216B statute definitions. And while it wasn't my suggestion, I would like to also express support for the language in the amendment that asks applicants to research and, if available, apply for the utility energy efficiency incentives made possible through the Conservation Improvement Program. These energy efficiency programs help reduce project costs and provide value to all Minnesotans. Thank you to all who've worked on this bill and hope there is continued support.
And for questions, I've got Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was disappointed not seeing anything indicative of last year. In January, I received my energy summary for the following year, and I was hoping to see some of the effects of remote work. I know a lot of entities have decreased their expenses by doing remote work over the last few years. And, you know, frankly, if we are serious about conserving, energy consumption and spending of the state, we ought to really look at all of the facilities we have, enable remote work. In the private sector, it's very common to have office locations where someone comes in for just a couple days a week. So you save all the driving, you save the multiple things, and they also save in size of the facility. Then we could do a study of utilization, consolidate, and some of our worst sites could be decommissioned. I know you can spend a lot of money trying to bring something up to new energy efficiency, but when it's designed generations ago, oftentimes there's a limit to what you can do. So I was disappointed not to see that information on last year to help us envision how we could do government better and save so many different components of waste and utilization. So can one of the, I think the person doing the slides, can they give any insight to the preliminary stuff that they've seen from last year?
I think that's Mr. Grubbs.
Chair Nelson.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Krebs.
Chair Nelson, Representative Quam, great question. It's very preliminary. What we're starting to see for 2020 is the final utility bills are coming in or have yet to come in. But what we're seeing in spaces that were partially occupied still, so spaces where where not everyone was able to go work from home, we're seeing that it was a very consistent energy use from the previous years, and the reason for that is a bit complicated, but if you remove people from a building, you lose their body heat, so then you have to make up that body heat. And then if you are working to mitigate the impacts of a pandemic, you're also circulating more fresh air into a building, which causes you to do more cooling and also more heating. And so we see a lot less use of lights and computers and things like that, and that saved energy, but our HVAC use went up slightly. And I think that there are people, and we can get more information to you about activities that are going on to look at lease spaces and the need for office space going forward. So.
Thank you, Mr. Grubbs. Representative New.
Mr. Chair, there was a follow-up.
Well, Representative Quam, follow up. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the summertime, I guess if when they get the data, can you pass that along? Because that's counterintuitive to what I've heard with discussions of large private business entities during this time, and some of those. It'd be great to see the data, and I'm shocked that it's so much slower finding that data then. Like I said, I received stuff in January that had the summary of the previous year. But thank you.
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question to the author, with the Renewable Development Fund, is that currently an interest-bearing fund, or does it generate investment income?
Representative Freiberg.
I believe it generates income, but I think House Fiscal staff might be able to confirm that, or maybe Mr. Grubbs.
Ms. Roberts,
Mr. Chair, members, I would have to research this. It's not a fund that I work with, so I can find out and get back to you.
Ms. Roberts, would that be similar to the funds that the but all the other money that's handled by the state, the cash balance accounts, aren't those managed by the State Board of Investment so that they do invest some of that money?
Yes, Mr. Chair, you're correct. The State Board of Investment does handle investment of all of our funds. I'm just not up on the specifics for this one, if it's treated any differently or has any specific special things. So I will look into it.
Representative Brindley, follow up.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you. I asked that question just because the language allows for interest-free loans. So that was why I asked that question. My other question is, I assume this is going back to the energy because the Renewable Development Fund falls under the jurisdiction of the Energy Committee. So that's where this will lie ultimately. But I'm wondering, the direct purview of this committee would be the cost to the state. So I'm wondering why we're moving this bill through our committee without an appropriation for those admin costs.
Representative Freiberg or Ms. Roberts?
I guess I defer to Ms. Roberts. I mean, I know that because there are costs to the Department of Administration that necessitated a stop in this committee.
And members, the chair of the Energy, Climate and Energy Committee asked for it back because he plans on putting this as part of his omnibus bill. That's
Mr.
why
chair?
It's going back there.
Representative Brindley. May I just clarify, Mr. Chair? I guess the question is, from our committee, and so maybe this is a question for you, Mr. Chair, from our perspective, our jurisdiction, we would be concerned with the fiscal impact to the agency, but we're passing this bill through our committee without an appropriation for those agency costs that are outlined.
And I'll ask Ms. Roberts about the fiscal note. That would be in the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair and Representative Brindley, you're correct. The fiscal note shows general fund costs for the Department of Administration for an additional staff person and some software. And you're also correct that the bill doesn't have an appropriation to cover that. I think it would be up to the chairs of the two committees if the Energy Committee wanted to fund that. That is not out of practice of the legislature. Sometimes other committees will cover costs for agencies in other jurisdictions. So I think it's more of a process issue.
Representative Brindley, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess that's to be worked out between then you and the chair of the Energy Committee, where that money would come from out of the targets. It seems like admin costs would typically come out of the target for this committee. So it just seems premature to pass this bill without those costs accounted for in an appropriation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did actually have a question, but I'll try to actually just make a comment and follow up offline because I know we're tight on time here. First, I want to thank you. I know you talked a little bit about modernization of our facilities and consolidating for more efficiency. As well as modernization in our practices for IT and technology enables that across the state. So I'm really grateful for that. I wanted to briefly mention that I know the RDA funds actually come from ratepayers. So the really beautiful part about this bill is that it allows us to funnel that money back into saving money and efficiency and of course, hopefully tax dollars into the future. So I really, really appreciate that. And I guess if there's even a moment, I would love to hear very briefly, you know, we know that a lot of our buildings are a little bit older and have some definite efficiencies that can be gained to save the state money over time. And I'm curious if you could speak just briefly to the age of our buildings and the value of retrofitting those buildings. And I'm not quite sure who the best person to answer this question is.
Mr. Grubbs, I don't know if you can answer that question.
Chair Nelson, Representative, I will try to do it in like 30 seconds for you. But we have a number of older buildings. We keep our building stock for quite a while. We have, I'll just use the Department of Corrections as an example. A lot of square footage of correctional facilities. They operate at, we know, a much less efficient way than they could, and they also makes for spaces that are really uncomfortable. Our office space can be similar if it's not be maintained. It's less efficient, less productive workforce in it. And I think much of what we're talking about, retro commissioning, is one of the practices that would fall in the revolving loan fund. And it looks at how a building is used today rather than what it was built for, and optimizes it for the current use, so making it more comfortable and more productive for the people in it.
And Representative Freiberg, if you wanna wrap up and get the final word in quickly, and then we can go to a vote. You're muted.
Yep, the computer just told me that. This bill would allow needed improvements to happen that would improve energy usage around the state agencies. I think it's an important goal, and I would encourage members' support.
So with that, members, I'll renew my motion that House File 70, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Climate and Energy, Finance and Policy. Ms. Spreck, take the roll, please.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleborne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
No.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Kwan?
No.
With a vote of 8 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails.
And so with that, members, the motion prevails with this is on its way back to climate and energy. With that, members, our next meeting is tomorrow. We have 5 bills up on the schedule. Hopefully we can get through those tomorrow. And with that, members, this meeting is adjourned.